Was it really just 300 Spartans versus the entire Persian army? Did Alexander the Great really believe he was a god? Was the Tower of Babylon a real place? If you've ever been watching a movie, a TV show, reading a book, maybe even playing a video game that set itself in our own history, you may have asked some of these questions. The Grimdark History Podcast looks to explore that intersection between history and popular fiction, and we want to get to the nitty-gritty details and answer those questions while exploring all the fun, fascinating, and interesting things in our own history. Come check out the Grimdark History Podcast.
I didn't need to see the thing's naked gun.
What are you talking about?
She can still get slapped by the white pimp hat.
I mean, I know what a mole is, and I know what a man is.
After Batman and Robin, not allowed. Not allowed to be in any movie ever again.
All I could do is picture Jessica Alba riding a bullet out of a gun.
Hello, and welcome to Movie Smash!
Hello and welcome to Movie Smash, a show where we dive headfirst into comic book movies outside the MCU. If you're new to the show, thanks for joining us. If you've been here before, you know the drill. Each episode, we're going to smash a movie whose source material is from a graphic novel or a comic. Is it worth revisiting? Should it be forgotten? Let's find out. This is Movie Smash. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Roberts. I'm the founder of Off Panel Creations. With me today, I have a gentleman who enjoys the same sort of fashion as Dr. Doom, Jeremy Parmentier.
This is Jeremy Parmentier, also of the Retrovaniacs podcast, and I don't want to brag, but I have a fantastic foreskin.
With us today as well, we have the gentleman that could have done the voice work for The Thing, Fergal Amayo.
Well, I don't know if it would have been a thing. I think I would have more looked like, sounded like Johnny Storm, acted like Mr. Fantastic. So let me talk about what we're talking about. It's Gotham Knight Comics. We're going to get our nerd on.
For today, our guest host, Caleb Jenheimer.
Hi. Yeah, I'm sad you didn't intro me as having a body like the Invisible Woman, I guess. Everybody else got a little precursor add-on there. But yeah, I'm from the Black Flare podcast. We are a TTRPG, tabletop role-playing game, actual play podcast using the Delta Green system, which is Lovecraftian in nature, set in the modern day, analogous to probably the closest comparisons would be True Detective and The X-Files.
And for our audience, our movie tonight is 2005's Fantastic Four, starring Ian Grutford, Michael Chiklis, I always get his names wrong, Chris Evans, and Jessica Alba. Directed by Tim Story. What a perfect name for a director. Tim Story.
He tells a pretty good story in this movie.
Exposure to a high-energy cosmic storm could advance our knowledge about planetary life.
To our future.
I don't trust him.
We got what we wanted.
Just worried about what he wants.
Your entire biophysical structure is changing.
It's terrible news.
I think I'll get a second opinion.
The cloud has fundamentally altered our DNA.
That's gross.
Reed, look at me.
I can't.
He's heating up from his core.
You don't want to walk around on fire for the rest of your life, do you?
Is that a trick question?
It's actually a good movie. I'm just going to spoil the whole thing. It's actually a decent movie. Even though it follows no comic story, this is a pretty damn decent movie. At least it's better than the Fantastic Four movie that shall not be named.
And maybe I have to cut that out because we haven't done a spoiler warning yet. Before we jump into it, Caleb, why did you pick Fantastic Four?
I picked this movie actually because I have a special attachment to one of the actors in this movie. So when this came out, I went and watched it in theaters like right away. Ian Griffith, I believe is how you pronounce his name, even though it's spelled in a very different way. He starred in a long-running series called the Horatio Hornblower series over across the pond for those of us in America. It's based on a series of C.S. Forrester novels about a character who's works his way through the British Navy over the course of like the Napoleonic Wars and stuff like that. It's like a fantastic young adult-ish, you know, kind of swashbuckling Navy series that's, you know, the effects might not hold up super great today, but I mean, they went out there on real boats and filmed and stuff, and there's kind of a coming of age story. So I was like, I grew up with those. I was really attached to those. And when this came out, I went and saw it right away. I was hoping it would be Ian's big breakout role that got him into major Hollywood acting gigs. And it kind of wasn't. I don't know that he's been in a whole lot other than those couple things. But that's why I picked this movie. It's kind of got a place near and dear to my heart because of that actor.
So, guys, were you familiar with the Fantastic Four as a comic before seeing this movie?
Oh, yeah. I mean, my God. So first off, let's start with the fact that Fantastic Four number one is one of the top five most valuable comics in the current marketplace. Let's just go with that. It's created by the ever ubiquitous Jack Kirby. Let's go with that. And Stan Lee. So yeah, we're familiar. I'm assuming everybody read at least one of the original issues or first 100 read of this book.
Yeah, I was, you know, every time I go through a phase of being into comics, Fantastic Four has always been in that kind of interest, except for the most recent run. Not that I don't like it. I just, for whatever reason, in my last 5 years or so of being really into comics, has not really involved the Fantastic Four, except for in their crossovers. But I know the characters. I've been reading it since I was a kid, so I'm very familiar with the comics themselves.
I am actually not familiar with the comics. So just to full admission here, I am not like a comic book nerd. I love comic book nerds, have a lot of friends who are, but I am a film and TV buff. I actually work some freelance work as a first assistant cameraman on, you know, commercials and short films and stuff. So I am heavily steeped in film and TV, but comics are not my thing. So I will have to defer to the comic experts here on, you know, I have no idea if this is accurate or based on a specific comic or not.
It's an early 2000s superhero movie, so you can bet it's probably not going to be.
Okay. Okay.
Now, myself, I'm familiar with the Fantastic Four. I was never a sort of a follower of theirs. I never read any of the series. Since then, I've read a few here and there, but I've never been I never subscribed to the series.
Okay.
So was this I assume, Caleb, this was not your first time seeing this movie, but for you guys, Fergal and Jeremy, was this the first time you saw the Fantastic Four?
Oh, that is actually a bad question. I'm like this young man. I saw it in theaters. I saw, I was in the front row, popcorn and Jay in hand. Let's watch this movie.
I did not see this in the theater. I did see it once before, but only once. I didn't have fond memories of it. Not that I thought it was terrible, but I was not impressed with the way the thing looked, which ruined it for me in many ways in my mind. But watching it again, I don't think I have quite the same opinion this time through.
Yeah, the first time I saw this was actually on DVD. I did not see this in the theaters. 2004, I was still building a business, so I was a little busy at the time. Back then, I was just watching movies when they came out on DVD. So, Fergal, you've sort of alluded to some of the history, but do you want to give us a brief background of who the Fantastic Four are?
Fantastic Four, created in 1961. First 50 issues kind of delve into a lot. This is Jack Kirby at his finest, if you guys don't know who he is. He was one of the original three, Steve Ditko, Jack Kirby, Stan Lee. These guys were kind of the legendary creators at Marvel that birthed so many characters. Fantastic Four was him and Stan Lee's creation. Really sort of an answer to the Justice League, if you really wanted. I mean, the guy who was running Marvel at the time was golfing with the guy who was running DC, and they were talking about Justice League, and that's how Fantastic Four got born. But Stan Lee was like, I'm going to do this with the warts of Spider-Man. So he's like, I'm going to make these characters real, which gives him the characters Von Doom. No one's ever told a real story about Victor. So it's going to be interesting if they do it right in the new comic. But Von Doom, who is the main bad guy in this, the story is completely wrong, but the Fantastic Four origin is completely right, and it is honestly still one of the highest selling comics of all time. And you're going to get, like, there are so many key issues, like Intro to Namor, Intro to Black Panther, Intro to Galactus. These all came out of Fantastic Four.
Yeah, they're called, what, the First Family for Marvel?
First Family, yes.
Wow, I wasn't aware of that. But that's interesting, because when you watch this film, it does sort of feel primordial. The characters, in terms of all the different comic book characters, they feel so sort of essential, right? They're like sort of these very simple but powerful characters in terms of their superpowers that they have and sort of the backstory, at least as presented in this film. Again, I'm not familiar with the comics, but that makes sense that it's kind of very early or one of the first.
The way I understand it, the reason why it's called the First Family, not just because of its age, but also because it's one of the first superheroes that have a family dynamic to them in later issues.
Okay.
Versus
okay.
Like, everyone's a widow. Everyone's an orphan, I mean. Everyone's got, you know, everyone's by themselves. They're all solo. These are a group of four people designed as a group of four people. They're not a team up. That's who this core is.
So was it pre-X-Men,
Oh, Avengers? Yeah. This was pre, yeah. This was about around the time of Justice League. So this is when the Justice League first hit out in DC's world. 1961 timeframe is when this came out. And yes, Chris, to your point, they have children, Valeria and Franklin. And Franklin actually happens to be the most powerful mutant ever. Like, he's like literally considered the top five, like along with Professor X, Magneto, Iceman. He's considered, and Marvel Girl or Jean Grey. He's considered one of the top. I mean, he can create universes. Like, he's the reason why Onslaught existed. So there are so many different stories that bear off from these guys. And honestly, you'll find them in every great war. Like, I mean, again, if what I hear tell for this new movie is accurate, we're going to see the Council of Reed, right? So it's gonna, you're going to get to see, you know, I mean, Doom is doing some serious things, including bringing in the bad versions of Reed Richards, who is, like, arguably, besides Tony Stark, the smartest guy in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, so but for our movie tonight, quick spoiler warning for everybody. It's our, if you're first time joining us, just a heads up. We're going to discuss certain elements of this movie that sort of consider spoilers. Even this movie has been overly rebooted several times, but consider yourself warned. Caleb, do you want to walk us through actually what happens in this movie?
Yeah, so basically you have Dr. Reed Richards and his friend Ben Grimm. They convince Dr. Von Doom to allow them use of his spaceship. It's like a space station to conduct these cosmic ray biological experiments. Those three guys, accompanied by the siblings, Susan and Johnny Storm, are subjected to DNA mutation when the cosmic ray energy arrives at the space station ahead of schedule, causing all of them to take on various superpowers. Basically, what follows is a superhero adventure wherein the Fantastic Four are pitted against Dr. Doom, who's intent on using his newfound abilities for evil. Right? So that's where we get various iterations of them trying to actually cure themselves from what they perceive as these mutations, genetic mutations, because the thing's having a tough time of it, right? And then Von Doom realizes that, oh, I've got these powers too. I should maybe use these, but I should get these other four out of the way if I'm going to be the superpower. And there's various very 90s sideline scenes interjected in there along the way of them, like, sort of experimenting with their powers and trying to learn how to use them, and then a big showdown at the end.
So. Yeah, in essence, this is really an origin story for five different people.
Yeah.
So why don't we jump into some of these characters? Where do you guys want to start?
Well, I mean, I think that the one that I thought was, I mean, so Von Doom's had a very cool, and he, again, that's not supposed to happen, but I thought that, I first of all, I liked Human Torch. I liked the way that kind of worked. I think they did the worst job on Mr. Fantastic, but I thought they did the best job on the Human Torch. I thought they did, and I think Ben's was probably the best practical. Like, going back, I'm like Jeremy, going back and looking again, like when he was picking up that ring, I mean, from what I heard from the backstories of what, you know, I cannot remember the guy's name, but what he went through to get suited up, that was hardcore, man. That was super hardcore. So kudos to them for that practical effect. But I think Tony Storm and that hot chick in the ice was pretty damn phenomenal.
Yeah, as far as the characters go, being accurate to what I would believe them to be from the comic books, Johnny Storm being kind of this brash, you know, hotshot character, thought was a good match. I thought that Mr. Fantastic and Sue were fine. Like, they, in the comics, they don't have as much personality, I think, as The Thing and Johnny Storm. They're there. They're supposed to kind of be like almost like the voices of reason in some of the things, kind of like grounding everybody. But I thought they also were done pretty well. And I thought that The Thing's portrayal in this, where he gets a lot of the sadness of being The Thing, that kind of like, I'm now this monster and I, you know I have this power, but I don't have the ability to turn this on and off. Everyone else can hide. I can't hide. My life's been turned upside down. You know, he's got the kind of downside of being this Super Hulk character without the Banner part. And I like how that was captured in this. At first, like when I remember this, I didn't like that because I didn't like the makeup. But again, on second, we'll talk about the effects later. But on this viewing, I liked that sadness they capture with The Thing.
Agreed.
Ben Grimm's, his character really did portray how sad and frustrated he was the whole movie. You're right, Jeremy. It's funny looking back at when I remember seeing this movie 20 years ago, I was always saying to myself, the effects on him were just kind of goofy. He's just a guy in a giant rubber suit. Looking back, they actually look better than I remember. And he actually puts a lot, he emotes a lot through that, which is surprising.
I knew this was going to be, right, like the thing that got talked about pretty quickly is the special effects specifically of The Thing, because at least online, that's kind of what remains as a primary sort of sticking point for a lot of people on this character. But I would say as somebody who's like not, I'm not familiar with the comics, so I don't know the the minutia of what the character is supposed to look like. And I understand there's a bit of a rubber suitness to how it looks, but per your point, Chris, I really think that that suit did allow the actor to emote through the suit, through the face of the suit. And honestly, on the rewatch, it's like, that's kind of the character that has an emotional arc that carries you through the entire movie in the first place. I mean, we could talk about Storm and Mr. Fantastic sort of like on again, off again, love interest thing, but that doesn't really, it's pretty light. It doesn't really carry you emotionally through the story. It really is that Ben Grimm character turning into the Thing and not being able to turn it off and on. And so I think that's honestly
for the Storm.
Right. Yeah. It's like if that wasn't there, or if that was flat, if his performance was flattened by either it being like a CGI face, or especially in that era, I think there were a lot of superhero films that went the CGI route early in that early CGI era where it doesn't work and it really kills the film. So it's hard to say, but I think that maybe on my second watch carries me through it a little more, even if it is a rubber suit and you can sort of tell.
But I think that has benefits too. Like, we covered the first, I guess the Eric Bana Hulk movie, which was fine. But the Hulk doesn't have emotions really, other than rage. He doesn't do anything else. So you didn't have to worry about it. But he also couldn't have done any of the range of emotion that the Thing was able to pull off. But also, when he moves around, it looks good. All the action scenes with the Thing in this look good because he has human movement. Where there were definitely scenes with the Hulk when, especially when he's like jumping around or kind of in the middle of stuff, where it was just kind of like, ah, that looks like a really bad CG guy, kind of, that's out of place, a cartoon, where the Thing doesn't feel like that, which is kind of a nice treat for this era of movie.
Yeah, the only thing I thought was bad on this viewing of the effects for him, I know we're not in the effects section of our discussion, but it was really his neck, and that was it. It's like, when he would turn his neck, that would look like rubber, and the rocks would bend the wrong way, but the rest of them, they did a great job at the end of the day.
Well,
of how
that
he
when
looked.
He brought his arms up over his head, you can kind of see a pull underneath the arm. If we're being a little particular about things, you can definitely see the pull. And the whole thing I was thinking about is, how does a rock dick work? Like, what do you just whip that bitch out and get a pole to stand it up on? Because, I mean, you got to hold. I mean, he's super strong, but I mean, he's all rock. So I'm going to throw it out there. Somebody had to have thought it in this podcast group. So I'm just going to put it into the air.
To our listeners, if you have an answer for Fergal, please send a note to that movie-smash.com, and I will read that to Fergal and see his reaction.
I mean, I'll say you get to see his fingers, so that's close enough. He's got giant, massive rock fingers. Just go with that, Fergal. You're good.
Actually, it's funny you say that. My son was watching this with me, and he actually said the terrible part of his mutation was not that he became a rock, was that he lost one of his fingers on each of his hands.
Yeah.
That sucked. I would agree with your son. I think your son should guest star in this show as well, because I think that is a phenomenal set of commentary right there, because I completely... That jumped me. That's like a, I don't know, it's very Hanna-Barbera situation there.
Very Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
Which, he did wear a trench coat and a big hat. He just dressed like a turtle.
I mean, I guess, you know, there's the one person within the film who definitely was not curious about that was his wife, because she was done, out of there immediately.
That wasn't his wife. That was his fiancée. She like literally did, she looked at him and she was like, hell no. And then as soon as he saved a whole bunch of people, she's like, here's your ring. I don't even want to die to you. Yeah. Oh, when I see your big fingers, let me put it on the ground.
Well, not only that, like, after she's like welcome him home, she comes outside wearing her nightie.
That's how I get the mail. So I get that.
Now, how'd you guys feel about, we touched on Johnny Storm a little bit, but how do you feel about his character development? I mean, when he comes back to being this, how he learns about his powers.
I do. That's how I think of him from the comics. Was he's younger than the other characters. He's a lot more of a hothead. It's that kind of how, like, when we watch Green Lantern, the same way we feel about Green Lantern, who's like a hotshot pilot. He's very similar. It's very much like, as soon as he realizes he has these powers, especially because he can turn them off and they're kind of cool, like he's snowboarding and then bursts into flames. That's cool, right? And the motorbike scene, like halfway through the movie, he's like, I'm going to get out and do this. And I know I can do it. Watch this. I'm going to do this trick and I'll show everybody. And it, you know, he's out there. He thinks it's cool. He doesn't have any other concerns. Like, is this slowly killing me? Should I make sure everyone knows I even have these powers? Are they something people can catch diseases from? Like, the other team seems to be worried about finding a cure, but also keeping themselves separated from the world. He's not. I like that portrayal. It definitely makes him feel like he's the loose cannon, but at the same time, you know, he's family to at least one of the members. He does feel connected. He's not completely out there, but I liked him as, you know, you need that to open the door that wouldn't have been opened otherwise, to kind of have those action scenes.
Well, I will say that, you know, while they're an open family, they really did, when Johnny had the whole motorcycle thing, they really did air family business out in the street, didn't they? Was that just me, or were they like, listen, no, we don't really did. Care about what's going to happen? They put it all out in the, it was worse than the Facebook argument. They just took it all out in the middle with people following them around.
There's no secret identity in this world at all.
No.
Well, there's no other superheroes. So it's not that there's a matter, there's all these, like, and they were seen in their regular, except for the thing, they were seen in their regular, you know, vision in this, the bridge scene. So they have no way to be hidden. And at least Reed is already kind of a nationally known figure. So it's hard to be like, oh yeah, well, no one knows who that guy is. Like, he's already a well enough known scientist.
Speaking of Reed Richards, how do you feel about his character? I mean, he is technically the only autistic character, first autistic character in Marvel.
And is he actually autistic by Marvel?
It's actually by canon. He's canonically autistic. So how do you feel about that portrayal was? Wow, I know somebody that Fergal doesn't know. That's crazy.
No, honestly, about this particular character, I know so much about these characters that you actually shocked me. And that would have been one of those little weird details that, Chris, you would have found on the Steelbook. Some Steelbook somewhere, you would have found that. That would have been jumped out at you. But no, I completely missed that. And I thought that was cool because I just discovered that the girl who plays in Last of Us is also autistic. And actually was a producer of the show who discovered she was autistic. And that's a great show. So awesome. I think
which has
okay.
nothing to do with this movie.
So to be clear, are you saying that the character as written is autistic?
Yes. Reed Richards is supposed to be an autistic character. Now, mind you, it may have been a retcon, but at some point it became canon that he was.
Well, that's probably the reason why it became Marvel canon, like into the story. Okay, that might be the reason for the maker. That explains a lot of different variations of Reed Richards. So you might have just given me something I'm going to dig into when this is all over with, because there's some extra variations of this character that I'd like to look into that might explain things. Now, thank you, my man.
I just gave you a rabbit hole to dig down.
I can dig down it for
30 minutes. Let's talk about Sue Storm. So I'm confused on her power set. I mean, she can turn invisible, but is she also telekinetic? What's that with the force fields? I don't understand this character.
She can bend light. She can bend things. She can move things. She can create it. It's sort of bending light, but she can also use light, like light construct, which would be invisibility, sort of force field, sort of bending light around an object, and that light will harden up. And again, it's comics, so remember, we can stretch the incredulity here. So she can bend light, and she can actually create little bubbles and pop heads and do all kinds of crazy shit. She's got no super strength, oddly enough, so she can still get slapped by the right pimp hand.
Well, if we're being honest here, even real physicists still can't agree on whether light is a ray or a particle. So maybe she's using those two aspects of it to either bend the light or fire it as a particle to enact a force, you know?
Who is not looking at Jessica Alba's ass, though? Come on, guys.
I knew it. I said, Chris, within 5 minutes, we're going to hear this.
Who is not looking at Jessica Alba's ass? There was a level of 90s hotness that was going on in that moment.
I honestly couldn't even place her. It was like, I just popped the movie on. I didn't look at anything, Google it or anything. And I haven't seen this film since I saw it in theaters. So it's been a really long time, right? It's 20 years. And I'm watching going, Jessica Alba? Is that who that is? I'm pretty sure that's who it is. But I wasn't sure. I had to look it up because I was like, I think that's Jessica Alba. Was she in this? So I had one of those.
Did you ever see Sin City? Did you ever see the movie Sin City?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so you know the girl, Nancy, up there doing the thing. That's Jessica Alba. Woo! There's something about Jessica Alba.
So part of it was, correct me if I'm wrong, but I got the distinct impression in this film that she maybe had some sort of a lighting prescription in her, like, acting contract or something, because she was lit, like, even in scenes where the guys and everybody else standing around has this like dynamic, harsh, multicolor lighting on them, she's like lit perfectly, like she's on the front of a magazine, at least on her face and stuff. So that's almost what was like throwing me off trying to figure out who it was, is she was lit so like perfectly in most of the scenes that it was hard to like tell what the face was. It looked airbrushed.
It's like the girl from Cemetery Man. That's Jessica Alba. At some point, it doesn't matter what you throw them in. The light is going to bend because it's Jessica Alba. And I'm just going to give that out for everybody else because I think that's a much easier explanation. It's just Jessica Alba. There are certain women where you look at them and the shit just kind of looks really good. And that's because they're incredibly hot.
Hear me out. Maybe she was using her superpowers, you know, to give herself perfect lighting in every scene.
So what you should go do is go back and rewatch the movie and see if the lighting on her changes after the powers. And then maybe that's what it is.
Oh, there you go.
Victor Von Doom.
Probably the best fun version. I mean, again, if you, because there's only been, amazingly enough, I believe maybe three versions of Victor Von Doom on film. And this was the second one. And then obviously the guy played the third one. This was probably from a bad guy perspective when it was actually Doom and he's wearing the helmet. And I was looking at this because I wanted to make a really pithy comment. When he was wearing the helmet and the eyes came through, like they focused on the eyes under the helmet. Put that up against any comic page and you will guarantee see a direct shot between, like, the anger that was just a rage he had at Reed and the way it looks under that mask. That literally was taken directly from, so somebody was paying attention when it came to that scene.
That brings up another thing that I really enjoyed about this film that I think has been lost in a lot of modern current takes on comic books in film. A lot of the shots in this felt like they were could have been pulled from a comic book cell. The way they composed the shots had sort of that feel. They take an interesting angle on it from up high or down low, and the way they situated various characters within the frame.
I think some of the ones that highlight that the most are really the Von Doom ones, because there's like early on when Reed goes there to pitch his idea. He's in the shadow, and you know it's Von Doom. You just don't know what he looks like. And then later on, they're in the parking lot, and he's talking to the, I guess he's the head of the board, and trying to convince him not to destroy the company or sell the company off. And he's also sort of in the shadows a little bit. You're right, that could be right out of a comic book page.
Well, the other scene I thought of was when they first get to Reed's lab, and they kind of do the pull-away shot where you see all the like gadgets over his lab. That's very much a comic book, like full page.
Yeah, some of the full page, like essentially the establishing shots, especially for a lot of the scenes felt like that.
Did you see the ultimate nullifier in the, because the ultimate nullifier when they first walked in was in that big space. And in case you guys don't wonder, the ultimate nullifier is the weapon that Reed Richards created with Atu the Watcher that defeats Galactus. And that was actually in the, there was a scene where they first open up to the wide space and you can actually see it on one of the things hanging on the wall. It's literally the ultimate nullifier or the outline of the ultimate nullifier.
Yeah, I bet there's a bunch of good Easter eggs in there. If you really like pause frame and look through the whole room, that's the kind of place you'd find all those little callbacks.
So this is an origin story, obviously, but so there's a lot of learning your powers and establishing, you know, your power sets. But what scene stood out to you guys the most?
When he jumps off the building and he goes flame on, I thought that was just the kind of that was probably when you kind of, okay, so if you're taking this, and you're going, where did they? Because by the way, Kevin Feige is attached to this movie. Do you guys know that as well? I did not know that. He's so far back before this thing actually got big. But Kevin Feige is actually attached to this movie. So if I'm thinking, you know, one of the things that Kevin Feige is known for is sort of analness and certain things. And that jump off when he jumps off the building, that was probably the best CG usage at that time frame for a movie.
Yeah, I like the part when he when the thing is coming out of the elevator and Johnny sees him and shows him the action figure. I don't know why, but I just love that.
Clobbering time.
It's clobbering time, and he destroys it, the action figure. I don't know why, but I love that scene.
That's a real Hot Toys action figure. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah.
So you knew that was a real Hot Toys action figure that existed at the time?
I forgot which line it was from, but yeah, it was actually from an actual line, which is funny because it looks nothing like him. It's like the way his body was stretched.
They never do.
I really love the scenes in this film that I think that sort of make it distinct and set it within when the film was made. So for me, that's it. It ends up being kind of those cultural referential scenes, like the X Games scene or the snowboarding scene. Like those just place this right in the heart of 2005. You know, there's even like in the sort of closing scene, where they're getting back together and they're out looking out over the water or whatever it is. And she's got like just the most 2005 bucket hat on ever. It's like, who put a bucket hat on Jessica Alba? But it was that time. So those are the ones that to me brought me a lot of joy, actually.
I think that was Hootie and the Blowfish who put that on her head somewhere in the background. They may have been standing.
So, Jeremy, I know you typically have an issue with origin stories. How did you feel about these scenes that showed them establishing their power sets?
So I normally have a problem with origin stories because it's always characters that we know the origins to. Like, you know the origin to Batman, so why do we still have origins for Batman 7 movies in, right? And also, a lot of these movies that are a one-shot, the entire movie is the origin, and then that's the end, right? This at least has a fairly good conflict with Doom, who's a notable character in the Marvel Universe before MCU. I mean, he's always been a large player. So to have him be the villain here and also kind of have his origin kind of tempers that, but also I like that there aren't a lot of superheroes in this, right? There, it's not like, oh yeah, I've got superpowers and now, you know, I'm in a world where everyone already knows Captain America and the Hulk and all these other things. There's no other superheroes that you're aware of, at least. Like, when the people have these powers and like, oh, it's not, it's like Superman or like whoever, like, nope. When they come out in their, that bridge scene, which is the first time the public really sees all four of these people and kind of using their powers, I like that it's them still trying to figure it out, so they're not quite sure what they can do. You know, Johnny can't fly. The Thing knows he's strong, but he doesn't know how strong. You only see Mr. Fantastic grab a wine bottle. So you don't really know. Oh, and I guess put his fingers under a door. But like, you don't really know what else he can do. So it's them kind of like they're trying to help, but they know they don't really know what they can do. And I think that's really, I like that for this origin story, because it's also Doom doing the same thing. It's Victor Von Doom becoming Dr. Doom and figuring out, here's you know, I now am like growing metal in my body to some point, and I have the ability to kind of telekinetically control stuff. He's different than the comic book version of Doom, but I think it kind of works in some ways. In other ways, it doesn't. I think he's the weakest part of this movie, but I think I still like that it's both the villain and the heroes learning their powers throughout the movie. So it's not just these heroes learning their powers and they fight against a intergalactic menace or another superhero. You know, the supervillain's been around the whole time. It's them and the supervillain kind of learning powers and gaining them at the same time. I like that.
That's such a well-thought answer.
That's a really well-thought answer. There's a couple things in there. I agree that Doom is... it's more that I want more Doom, right? Yes. I think it could have... the film really could have benefited from one more good set piece where they are teed up against Doom. It spends a lot of time with them in various situations trying to sort of solve their problem, as it were, of their powers and experimenting and figuring out how they work. And there's kind of just the one showdown at the end with where they're teed up against Doom. And even in that, it's like only in the very final battle that his like full form is reached, right? Because before that, he puts on the mask, but he's wearing it as a mask.
Right.
And then within that final battle is when it like fuses with his form and he just is that full-fledged Dr. Doom. I'm not familiar with how that works in the comics or whatever. It was kind of like, oh crap, he reached his sort of like mega bad guy mode. And then they immediately sort of dispatch him soon after that. It's a little bit anticlimactic.
Well, and he was way overpowered. Can I just really quickly say this? He stuck his hand in a cosmic storm. I don't know the... we're just going to brush past that and pretend like that didn't have any external consequences, but he did put his hand directly into a cosmic storm and absorbed literal unlimited power. And, you know, they put him up against, and all of a sudden is lesson 101. What do you do with hot metal? And we're going to supernova. So I felt like they overpowered him and then they depowered him very, very quickly.
Well, I think it's more they shut him down versus... no, eliminated him, because there's the end of credit scene or pre-credit right. scene where he's still alive and he's yeah. just basically trapped right now and he's going to break out of it. And that's really where he comes into the second movie, which, of course, that's not today's topic. I think you're, Caleb, you're sort of touching on something I've been trying to think through a little bit, which is I think there are too many. Human Torch sort of discovers his powers twice, but there's not enough Dr. Doom.
Twice.
At
yeah.
least twice, yeah. So we could have cut down that a little bit and had more Doom, maybe him doing something evil, except for just trying to eliminate the Fantastic Four. Because that motivation felt a little weak to me. Like, oh, I've got to get rid of the Thing because he's blocked me from getting to Reed. Well, why is that important to you? They're going through the same problem you're going through. You just don't want to give up your powers, which is fine. You don't have to do that. That's your choice.
So they didn't explain the rivalry between Reed and Victor very well.
No, they did not.
I thought in general, that's kind of what some of the issues were. Like the whole love story between triangle, sort of, between Sue and Victor and Reed, not really necessary, but I think they did that to, again, give more of a reason for Victor and Reed to kind of be head-to-head, but they didn't need to be. They've been lifetime rivals. They were rivals in college, but also in the comics, Doom is as smart as, or almost as smart as, Reed, and I think in this movie, he comes across, without any of that background, he just comes across as, like, yeah, they were, he felt dumb. He's not a dumb guy in real life. He's obviously a good enough businessman, but he's not a genius, right? He's not like the same kind of scientific genius that you'd put on the same plane as Tony Stark or Reed Richards, but he kind of is. In the comics, he's also very smart, and he's also a sorcerer. So he knows magic. He learns that's part of how he kind of grafts the mask onto his body permanently is through sorcery. So like there's a lot of aspects of Doom that are not used in this. And I think if you didn't have any of the comic background, he comes across instead as just like, I don't want to say spoiled rich guy, but kind of. And I think that's really hurting the character. Does. I think Doom is a lot more than that. I think, Doom has got this arrogance and pride that is his downfall every time, but it's not this like, well, I loved her, so I took her, and now you're not into it. She doesn't want me, so now I'm mad. And that's what it came across as in here, which I think is a little weak.
Yeah, it's I think it's both the thing to enjoy about this film and kind of its curse at the same time, is that everything is really simple. It is not complicated. It's just simple, straightforward, and bold. I'd be surprised if any of the other characters in this, beyond the Fantastic Four and Dr. Von Doom, are even credited by name in the credits. Because I couldn't name any of the other characters in the film other than those five by name. It would just be like Fireman Number 3 and, Banker Dude.
Does anyone remember the Thing's ex-fiance's name? Because I don't think they even mentioned it.
I know, because Alicia Masters is all that matters. And really, I mean,
well, right, but again,
go from her to, Kerry Washington. Come on, man.
You know that, again, as someone who's read the comics, you know that Alicia is what matters ultimately. But if you didn't, he has this fiance that you see pictures of for the first third of the movie. It's like, yeah, he's with this girl. You see her. And then she like panics. You figure there's gonna be more to that. No, that's it. I don't know they've ever mentioned her actual name. So that's exactly your point. Other than the Fantastic Four and Doom, everyone else in this movie might just be named Street Guy, Car Guy.
I think her name was actually Fiance.
See, that's a
Dr. Doom's assistant. He had a name. I don't remember what it was, but he said it a couple times.
Leonard. His name is Leonard. That's it. I believe his name is Leonard. It's coming to me.
This movie is 106 minutes, so it's not a long movie. Do you wish there was more to this movie?
No, it was there. To me, I think you could have just used to you guys of making already. They gave a couple. I don't think they gave enough. Like they tried to show the kind of migration of each person's powers. I think the star of that process was probably Johnny Storm. The heart of that process was probably the Thing. I think you could have done a little bit more with everybody else. You should have definitely given an act two on Victor, but you don't need to extend time. Just change some of the layouts and stop being gratuitous.
I kind of agree with Caleb that there should have been another Doom encounter in there, because you're right. It's like the whole movie progresses with him just kind of being in the background. You're like, he's slowly gaining powers and also is kind of losing his mind as he kills a couple people in there, but there's not like a full on encounter with him until the very end. And I don't know necessarily where I'd put that, but I think that would have helped a little bit. And I don't know if I would have removed anything to have that happen, because it would have been another 5 to 10 minutes of actual consistency and action. So I would have liked to see a little more Doom. Really, that's the only thing I think I'd like to see more of. I thought everyone else, again, I normally hate origin stories taking up most of the movie, but in this specific case, because it's everybody that matters, having that origin and growth, it works.
I'll put on my movie producer hat here for a second and say, if I had to change this, the snowboarding scene would go away. Like, that wasn't necessary to go into that depth of him finding out about his powers. You could have done it quicker and simpler, like with the other two, catch the wine bottle, turn invisible. And then I think you keep that BMX or X Games, you keep that X Games type scene. And I think it would have been great if you have that X-Men, that X-Games type scene, and then they have their, like you said, Fergal, the family feud right in the streets, and then maybe Doom comes in at that moment, and they have some sort of an initial encounter with him that maybe doesn't go well, and he ends up going into hiding, or they can't find him until he swings back around in the final act. It's like, so there needed to be that conflict earlier on in the film where they're realizing that there needed to be that pressure of not only finding a way to cure the Thing, but also having that pressure for more of the film that Doom is out there and he's like bad and he's a threat. Because that didn't come into play for enough of the film.
Speaking of Ben, I think another way you could have made that work too is, you know, Ben gets turned back into a human with Doom's help, and he's human for like a minute and a half. And immediately Doom goes, you know, goes off on Mr. Fantastic and is a bad guy. And he's like, well, I have to go back to be the Thing. Like, there's no real sense of like, we just did Superman 2 a little while ago. And at least in that, he becomes a human. Yes, it feels like he gets to go to a diner, gets his ass kicked and becomes Superman again. But there's still a sense of like loss that he can't be this human anymore, where I don't think this feels that way. It feels like he gets to be a human. Then he's like, I made a mistake. I don't want to be human. The end. Like, there's conflict no dwelling on it.
Maybe the pants didn't fit. Maybe he was like, Alicia only likes the orange rocks. There could have been a ton of intercurrent conflict going on. I just think it was all very minute and while he was knocked out.
And also, I think if they didn't know who Doom was for the first part, like maybe he's leaving this dual life of Von Doom, their frenemy, I guess. And then Doom himself is the antagonist. Maybe that could help stretch it out a little bit, because they know instantly that Doom is the bad guy, or Von Doom's the bad guy.
Well, but it's not even that he's a bad guy, right? I mean, he is by the end, but at first it's like they still have that frenemy stance, even when they both have powers. And it's only once he turns Ben back into a human and you kind of get him facing off against Mr. Fantastic that it's kind of clear, like, oh no, he's just completely, now he's the bad guy, right? But it's not like they knew the whole time, we have to be this team to fight Doom. So I think that wasn't terribly done, but it's very fast because you have to have that whole origin plus them learning their powers plus that build up. So I don't know, you know, I think you're right. I probably would have removed the snowboarding scene, because again, you didn't need it. Even the BMX scene, I like that it causes that conflict, but even that was maybe a little longer than it needs to be. And instead you could have actually had more of a buildup of Doom as an entity to know by the end why he's really the big bad of the movie.
Well, they're not even, it's so sort of separated for so much of the film. They don't even know that he's also affected by those cosmic rays.
Right. Yeah. Until that moment.
They assume that he's been put, that he closed those blast shields on the spaceship and that the four of them got affected and he's fine. So there's not even this pressure of them thinking, well, what's he doing with his powers? Because they don't even know about him. Right. Right.
Now, this movie came out around this is a Fox movie, not a Disney movie, obviously. And this came out around this time the X-Men were coming out. Could you see a crossover for these movies?
I mean, this is, again, we're going back to, so this is the roadmap of Marvel's future. So, again, let's go back to these guys, you know, Caleb, you said it earlier, they're an intersect, they're a primordial family. They do, whereas the Avengers kind of gave one leg of the stool, the other whole other side of that stool involving mutants, gods, monsters, these types, it's all about the Fantastic Four. They sit at the nexus of all that, because any decision that will be made to fix it will have to come from Reed Richards. I mean, that's the guy who's going to solve the problems, and it's really going to take the entire family in order to do it. So yeah, absolutely.
Well, I'm saying back then in 2004, right, could you have seen a crossover the late 90s X-Men with the early 2000s Fantastic Four universe?
They didn't even begin to think about, like, I don't think that process really, I think they were throwing spoilers left and right, but I don't think they were, they hadn't really built interconnectivity between these storylines yet.
So I went and did some homework on some of this timeline in the real world of when this came out and where it was situated, just because I was like really curious. So in terms of films, like significant superhero films that would have come out of Hollywood before this, not very far in front of this, you know, excepting older stuff, we're talking about kind of its era, would be X-Men 1 and 2 and Spider-Man 1 and 2.
Yep.
And then the elephant in the room of this film, Fantastic Four, 2005, is that this hit theaters 2 weeks after Batman Begins came out. So if you think about summer blockbuster or what have you, hitting the same category of moviegoers, that's what this was up against, was Batman Begins, which is a complete tonal approach shift in the Hollywood mindset of like what a superhero movie even can be. So, I mean, I think it got pretty harshly overshadowed pretty quickly by that Nolan Batman movie.
Yeah, I completely forgot that it came out around the same time period. I mean, And I think people believe Batman Beyond, that Nolan Batman was sort of the beginning of the new era of superhero movies, a darker, grittier version, more realistic version.
Nolan Batman was the billion-dollar franchise up until that point, the multi-billion-dollar franchise.
Yeah, so the basically saying that maybe the Fantastic Four was the end of that chapter.
Kind of was. It kind of was like, and there's even a quip, right? Because I'm assuming they're both making their movies fairly concurrently, and they put a Batman quip in this film. I don't know if you noticed it, but the one character says, maybe it's missing a utility belt when they put on their suits. And that's, I mean, in my mind, that's a direct jab at Batman. Because, again, they don't really know if they're making their film at the same time that Nolan's making his Batman film. They don't know what kind of a Batman film he's making. So it makes sense to make a utility belt joke when you're thinking about the other Batman films from earlier, right? That's kind of a little bit overdone, silly thing about some of those characters is the amount of things they cram into his belt and the gadgets and gizmos and stuff. And then here comes Christian Bale Batman looking like a badass with his belt, right? So it like kind of like doesn't land.
Well, yeah, the last Batman before that would have been Batman and Robin, which is exactly where you put a utility belt joke. Yeah, so that makes total sense.
Yeah.
Oh man, that movie was terrible.
Bat nipples.
Bipples? Is that what they're called?
So I guess I want to talk to you about some things that got changed during production, and I want to see if you wanted to see maybe that version of the movie. In early drafts of this movie, the antagonist was actually going to be Dr. Doom was always going to be there, but also Mole Men or Mole Man was the original antagonist.
That would have been cool, but that would have required a lot more explanation. Mole Man would have been, he's a cool character, and he is one that has screwed with the fan. He's actually one of the first characters the Fantastic Four went up against in the comics, but it would have been a very, very big explanation to make that work.
My fear would be that it would even make Doom even less impressive, right? To have this other villain that might be the what they think is the main villain, and maybe Doom teams up with him, or maybe it turns out Doom's a real villain after they beat Mole Man, who knows? But it still would take more time away from what we already are saying is not enough time spent on Doom.
I know nothing about Mole Man, so...
Yeah, I don't know anything about Mole Man either. But...
Well, he's very similar to the Mole Man in the Incredibles movie, actually, except he's got, he finds, it's actually really hard. Jeremy, have you seen The Incredibles? I'm assuming you have a kid.
Yes, I've seen The Incredibles.
So, you know, that Mole Man is actually kind of similar a little bit, except he's not as fuzzy around the edges. He's a little less fuzzy.
I mean, I know what a mole is and I know what a man is, but I don't know where
is he more mole than man?
Yeah.
No, he looks like, well, they have a habit in Marvel and Jack Kirby in particular, and quite frankly, a lot of the original guys have a habit of when they make a character, they sort of draw the body type to match the character. Look at Penguin, look at other characters, look at the Joker, you know, so yeah, he does kind of look like a mole and a man meet together, and it definitely doesn't hit it with the leg. He wouldn't get Jessica Alba on a date unless it was all personality.
So I want to talk about some of the casting choices they made or did not make in this movie. Now, there were dozens, so I've tried boiling this down to some ones I thought were pretty interesting. But again, do you want to see this version of the character at some point? Let's start with Reed Richards. The first one was Dennis Quaid.
I mean, that could have worked. That wouldn't have been bad.
No. I mean, I keep seeing him as that cop from the Spider-Man movie. No way. And just, I've seen him in so many other things. He's high strung, man. He needs to take the coffee. And remove it from set. He's just way too high strung for Reed Richards.
We're not talking Randy Quaid. We're talking Dennis Quaid.
Oh, not Randy. Is it? I thought you said Dennis O'Leary. Okay, so I'm sorry.
Dennis O'Leary would not have worked. That is true.
Yeah, no, Dennis O'Leary would have been like, yeah! But Dennis Quaid, now that I look at it now, maybe, but I don't know. I still think Ian Gufford did well.
Okay, how about George Clooney?
After Batman and Robin, not allowed. Not allowed to be in any movie ever again.
I gotta back my man here. I think they made the right choice. You know, I don't know the comic books, but my read is that he's supposed to be this sort of nerdy in his scientist type. And I don't think either of those guys would have played that particular well. You just think, I think of even Clooney. You go to another franchise that he's in, right? Like Ocean's 11. He's not the nerdy type in that. If you want the nerdy type, you're picking Matt Damon, right? It's like he's got range, but I don't think he's the right fit.
You guys probably want like these last two then. Brendan Fraser.
No, no.
He could maybe pull it off.
I just saw him in the movie Bedazzled, and I have, especially with March Madness going on, he was a member, the only member of the Diablos to score 100 points in the game. I'm just going to put it out there. Hot out to Brendan Fraser. In case you watch the movie Bedazzled, you'll get the joke. If you like basketball, you'll really get the joke.
Last one, Hugh Jackman.
I don't think it would work, because by this point, he already had done the X-Men movies, right?
That's right.
Yeah, so I don't think it would
really
work.
Really doesn't work. Yeah, there's no way.
Yeah. Now, for Sue Storm, there is a litany of women they had proposed for it, but just some of the ones that were interesting.
Dennis could have pulled that one off. Now,
yeah, Dennis Quaid would pull that right off.
Dennis Quaid could have pulled that one off. I think we have a unanimous 3-star approach on that one. That would have been great.
Scarlett Johansson was supposed to play Sue Storm.
She had just did The Island, if I'm not mistaken. She was just in between The Island or had done The Island. Yes, she would have been hot enough to do the Sue Storm situation.
That's the only characteristic that Virgil needs to know.
Requirement that needs to be added to this particular character. Go on. Keep going. Let's do this.
Cameron Diaz.
Not a chance. She was slightly too old at this point. She needed to stay with Charlie's Angels. I'm just going to put it out there.
Yeah, I'll back that. That's accurate.
Christina Aguilera.
What? No. No. Just make
I'm trying to think how old she would have been then, because she might have been too young then.
That would have been like putting Britney Spears in this movie. Yeah. And all we would have had is a meltdown.
And then we have Brittany. No. last for this one, Meg Ryan.
What? Maybe as like Sue Storm's mom.
Yeah.
Sue, come in, honey. But like, talk about the plane wreck. That would have been perfect.
There's only one person they had that their theme for Human Torch was Paul Walker.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he could have pulled that off, I think.
Totally.
He could have pulled that. Yeah, he could have pulled that off. But then we would not have been able to have Johnny Storm in Deadpool and Wolverine. And that would have been the great shame of today's that movie.
Okay, I got two for Ben. James Gandolfini.
No.
No. No. You just picture him beating someone with a bat. No.
I don't think he has I'm trying to think. He doesn't, like, Michael Chiklis looks like a bouncer, like a big dude. I don't think that James Gandolfini ever did.
Nah, he looks like he would kill somebody. James Gandolfini just looks like, I was just watching Crimson Tide, and when he took over the bridge in that movie, the sub movie, he literally looked like he just wanted an excuse to lay off around on somebody in a boat underneath the sea. Like, he just has that look in his eyes that you don't want. He may not save you. He may just be like, I will just throw you over anyway.
I think that might have worked pretty well. I mean, I absolutely love Sopranos, so I'm biased here, but his ability to just be like kind of unassuming, but also seething. And then when he snaps and is angry, he portrays anger and like physical rage really well in that show. So
he's a good actor.
I think he would have been able to do it.
Coming off Angel fame, David Boreanaz.
No, too tall. He'd have been taller than everybody. He'd had to walk around on his knees.
I would have seen him more as a Johnny Storm, which I still wouldn't say is good, but I think that makes more sense than the thing.
Then you might as well put the British guy in there as Mr. Fantastic, the British vampire, because he'd have made a perfect counterpart to Angel.
What, Spike?
Yes, he's British.
Not a Buffy guy, sorry.
Okay, now it looks like from the notes, Dr. Doom is where they had the most issues on who they were going to pick, and I'm not going to go through all 20 that I found that they were considering, but there were some that were definitely interesting. Nick Nolte.
Nope.
No. No, he always looks crazy.
Yes, 100%, which is why he's a great actor.
He's so great, but no, I'm with you guys.
Jeremy Irons.
Nope, another too crazy guy. Did not want him.
See, I think he can pull it off, but I think if you're trying to say he's supposed to be the rival, like the college rival of Miss Fantastic, yeah, he's too
more
old.
Like his professor again.
Yeah.
Maybe if Meg Ryan was Sue Storm and Dennis Quaid was Mr. Fantastic, then
Fantastic Four is all 45. If that's the case, yeah. We're in.
Okay, how about Gary Oldman?
That same situation. Doesn't make any
sense. Did you guys know, and I'm going to throw a little piece of non-interrupted trivia that throws in here. You know the mangled face guy in Hannibal? The guy with the mangled face in the movie Hannibal?
Yeah.
That was Gary Oldman.
Yo.
Not credited for that movie. That was Gary Oldman under the crazy ass face. Just throwing that out there. So maybe he could have had the range.
Michael Wincott, guy who played Top Dollar in The Crow.
Still know who it is. Still know.
Yeah.
Okay, but David Warner, he was the bad guy from Tron. Talking about aged.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's the same problem. These guys are all way too old.
They're going too old, yeah.
I only got two more for this one. Mel Gibson.
Same. By this time, he was still too old. In the 2000s?
Old and short.
Okay,
yeah,
if you're worried about age, my last one will fit perfectly for the age. Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, but then, see, Robert Downey Jr. had a different career path, and guess what? He still gets to play Victor Von Doom. So whatever, y'all. That's how we should do it, mic drop. Let's put it right there.
But I think he, I mean, obviously, I think he could have done fine at it. And I think, I mean, I'm glad he didn't, because now it has more of a pull in the UMC for him to do it, but he could have pulled it off.
Now, the director, they also passes around a few different directors. Now, there's only three of them I want to mention. One was Sean Astin.
I don't know what else he's directed.
I don't know either, but he's in Lord of the Rings.
Isn't he Gimli? Isn't he one of the little, he's one of the little hobbits,
yeah,
right?
He's
Samwise Gamgee. I think he only did movies with Kirk Cameron after that movie came out. I'm only pretty sure they kind of stayed at the amp, and that's why their careers went away.
What are you talking about?
I might be wrong.
I have no issue with him directing it. I don't know. I mean, I think he strikes me as a very intelligent person. So I think
I just didn't know anything else he directed. Like, if you'd be like, oh, he's directed this movie, I'd be like, oh, that makes sense. But I have no idea what he's directed.
I certainly would assume you wouldn't get anything drastically worse than what we got.
Yeah.
Peter Segal, who directed Naked Gun 33 and a third.
Well, that's a different kind of movie. 100%.
Exactly right.
100%. Do you want to see that movie, though?
Naked Gun? I've seen it. It's a great movie.
The fantastic version, Fantastic Four version of Naked Gun.
I didn't need more jokes. There was just enough like Johnny Storm level quips that I was good with just that. If the whole movie would have been, you know, a chance to make it Woody one-liner.
I didn't need to see
the
things Naked Gun.
So, yeah, that's true.
Like, you see, this show has too many jokes. No, I mean, I just think all I could do is picture Jessica Alba riding a bullet out of a gun. And that would be perfect. I could work with that. But I'm just wondering, does the rest of the world need to see that? Maybe. I don't know. Maybe that's what we're getting in 2025's version.
Last one is the gentleman who directed Independence Day, Roland Emmerich.
He made a lot of big budget things, but then you would have needed Galactus. You would have needed Galactus as the enemy in that. It wouldn't have been Doom. It would have had to be Galactus.
Guys, what did you, as we always do, what did you love about this movie? What do you think they could have done better?
I mean, I kind of already mentioned that I think they actually met the characters pretty well. I think all the people who played the main four, Fantastic Four, did a good job. I think the thing, if you're going to point at something and say the effects weren't great, the thing's costume, while it did have some benefits and how it moved and that, the, you know, for still shots, it looked generally okay. It's still the weaker part of this. And I wish they would have had a slightly more Rocky looking character. I mean, I know that it's a good almost 20 years later, but the stuff we've seen for the new Fantastic Four really does hit the art style that I think the thing looks good at. Now we'll see what it looks like for a full movie, but for the things they've shown, it looks good. I think Doom, they could have done a lot more with Doom in general. I don't think it's a disaster by any means. It's not like he's some, you know, completely insane person that didn't make any sense that they had there. They did an okay job having him learn his powers and build it up, but I think they could have done a lot more with Doom. So that's really the biggest thing they could have done better.
Yeah, I think it needed... the thing I love about the film is kind of the clarity of the characters. I mean, I think they're pretty bold and simplified. I think where they needed more complexity wasn't really the characters, it was like the plot points. It needed a couple more scenes, interactions, especially with the superpowers and fighting and stuff, to really fill it out. So that's my kind of love it, hate it. I like the thing. I like that the thing is kind of a simple physical suit. You know, I get curious about, like, if this were given to, again, maybe a 10 years later, like a Weta or something, to still do a physical real suit. But you'd look at some of the cosplay and stuff that people do where they're doing, you know, like Voltron or Optimus Prime, and they're technically, the suit makes them look like they're, you know, they're 10 feet tall instead of 6 feet tall. And they've got like an arm and a half long. You do something like that, so there's still something physical to work with, but it kind of like gives him more presence and sort of builds it as a real character. Because I am kind of sick of the CG characters. Like, it just doesn't do anything for me personally. So I loved that this was primarily really a fairly practical-ish feeling film with a lot of the effects and stuff.
You know, I'm gonna say overall, I mean, these are all very in-depth and amazing answers. First off, Jessica Alba's ass was brilliant. I think that they had the right characters going through this movie. There was just enough one-liners that the movie felt like I could watch it with the volume on and with the volume off and still be entertained. That's always a good sign. So I think it's it's an entertaining movie that didn't, you know, the only things that really diminished in time were the things where they were really trying to stretch the, like, Mr. Fantastic when he was getting a firefighter, stuff like that. But I think for being a movie that was just at the beginning of exploring the capabilities of what you can do with CG, I think they did a great job. I think the practical effects were exactly what they needed. I think they really went stupidly in the second movie, but this one they kept it very strong. And that's one of the things that they addressed in the new trailer with the new movie for the new Fantastic Four. Like, literally, if you think about practical CGI all thrown together, I think the culmination of that is what the new movie's got. But I think this movie hits it all. I mean, if anything, I'm probably biggest disappointment is Doom. The last fight scene, it just felt like the way they defeated him was to get him to go supernova and got him hot. Right? I mean, this guy had the power of gods, bro. I'm understanding what broke down in his mind. Was he just that angry, or did he get a case of stupid?
Yeah, for me, I have to echo, Fergal, what you said, and Kayla, what you said about the special effects. I think they really hold up. Considering this movie is 20 years old, it surprisingly holds up. Yeah, the thing's costume is a little goofy at certain parts. It stretches different ways. But when you're watching the movie for the sake of watching it, you don't always notice it right away. You kind of have to be looking for it for certain areas. Things I think they should change. I felt like the story was just a little too simple. Just a little too simple. I needed more to it. And maybe that's why Dr. Doom feels like he got defeated so quickly. And it just felt, I don't know, the Johnny Storm stuff, like, it just felt like it was filler at points, because we already learned his power several different ways. But at the end of the day, I think it's a pretty decent movie. Like I said, the special effects do hold up for 20 years. So guys, timing wise, we didn't pick this because there's a new Fantastic Four movie coming up, but there is one coming out this summer. Are you looking forward to it?
Oh, yes. Yes. I have first off, they really pay homage to the original 60s storyline. I mean, literally from the cars to the way it was set, while also giving something that, you know, and again, keep in mind, they rewrote this completely after the failure of Quantumania. I think we're going to get something really interesting, because it does open, you know, Captain America gave us adamantium. This movie gives us mutants. And I think that's going to be something that is going to just end Galactus and. So not only am I excited to see them, and they're not telling an origin story. They're going to use flashbacks. It's really about the future, not the past.
I wasn't, but after seeing the previews, I am. I think that the thing looks really good. I wasn't sure on the casting, but seeing it kind of that 50s, 60s look to it with everybody else, I think it looks like it could be really good. So I'm looking forward somewhat apprehensively to the new Fantastic Four.
Well, let's go down a rabbit hole here for a second, shall we? So you guys don't cover MCU films on your podcast, correct? Can you fill me in quickly on why... what the reasoning is behind that?
It's really just because everyone's covering it. And they're the biggest game out there right now. So pretty much everyone talks about them. There's a lot of stories, movies that just are overlooked.
Okay.
Cemetery Man. or Garfield. Yeah, no one's doing a show on Garfield. That seems to be lost the time.
Yeah. So to circle back to my answer now, I mean, the MCU drives me up a wall. So I could care less about this film coming out. I have not voluntarily watched a Marvel movie since Infinity War Part 2.
Not Endgame? Okay, Endgame.
Even before that, I checked out at Iron Man 3, okay? I watched that film and I was just like, this is too much, it's too ridiculous. Every single one that I watch is asking me to hold off on my enjoyment because Infinity War is going to bring it all together and make it awesome. And every single one that I watched, I was just like, well, I feel like I didn't really get a movie. You know, it's like I didn't get a satisfying story because they're just constantly trying to sort of tell you, well, we're feeding into this thing. We're feeding into this thing. And then, you know, I gave it due diligence, kind of said, all right, I'm going to watch this Infinity War thing and see if they kind of do something incredible and really pull this all together. And it just was like, for me, it was too much of a wait. It took them too long to get to it, and it wasn't like horrible, but it wasn't amazing once they got around to it. So, you know, I'm kind of on the waiting game. If people start telling me, oh, MCU's really turned it around and some of the new stuff they're doing is getting better, maybe I'll watch this. But, you know, I'm actually kind of checked out on the actual current day MCU, you know, filmography.
Look, Caleb, you got a lot of waiting. I mean, MCU's in a rebuild stage. There's a lot of hopes riding on this Fantastic Four. Actually, too many hopes, to be honest with you. Right now, all the attention is to be quite frankly, it's, I think superheroes in general, people are getting a bit burnt out on them. I mean, there's been a lot of talk on the Superman movie. That's the big thing coming everywhere because it's Superman. You know, the whole James Gunn grow up, you know, Lobo. And, you know, I mean, so really other than Deadpool and Wolverine, which was just Deadpool and Wolverine on a big screen having fun, giving the fans what they want, that's been a problem. Marvel had the formula for that for years. For years, they squandered it. And while Endgame is still the largest, most greatest grossing movie of all time, I think since that movie, they've dropped so many balls. I'm even watching Daredevil board again. I want to love Daredevil. Like, I love the Netflix. And I'm just like, what? Come on, man. What's going on here? What do you think of Moon Knight?
See, I love Moon Knight, but I like Moon Knight the comic, so I was happy with the Moon Knight version of the show. And I'm also fine if Moon Knight doesn't make a bunch of appearances in the rest of the MCU, but if he does, great. They don't have to do an intro. There's a whole series for it.
See, there you go. I was actually going to recommend that to you. Caleb, if you want to watch something completely fresh with fresh, clean eyes without worrying about whether it fits into something bigger or better, just watch Moon Knight. Watch all six episodes of Moon Knight. You'll love that show, and it's complicated enough for a young man like yourself to test the brain powers.
Yeah, see, I kind of just decided I'm checked out until somebody tells me like that I literally, you know, the right people are going to have to tell me that I have to check a certain thing out. I'm a Star Wars nerd, so I put my kind of like time to watch, you know, franchised, you know, universe style story stuff sort of into that.
Well, let's be honest, Andor is the best thing since the Christmas special.
Okay. All right. See, I was going to ask how it holds up versus that Garfield film that you guys reviewed the other day.
Watch Invincible, by the way. Just going to throw that out there. That I just watched the season finale for season 3, and that episode got in every ranking on every book 10 out of 10. It's actually the only animated episode on TV that's got 100% pure Rotten Tomatoes rating.
Yeah, that was a good show. So, guys, should people find this movie?
Yes. Well, you won't have to find it. It'll find you. And it's on Disney.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like, if you don't have Disney Plus or, you know, access to your siblings or parents' Disney Plus, like, I would assume most people have access to this film already via that. So, yeah, low barrier to entry in that. You're not going to have to go dig through the DVD bargain bin or pay for some weird streaming service to watch it. It's pretty easy to grab and watch.
Yeah, it's better than I thought it was. It's definitely better than the Fantastic Four that followed this casting. Again, the new one we'll see. But I think up to this point, you know, until the new one comes out, this is probably the best film version of Fantastic Four.
So for me, I think people should go find it. It's worth the watch. It's not as bad as I remember being. And I think maybe because I was just, it was a film of its time, but it holds up decently well. Like I said, it's a very simple movie. You're not going to go there and say, like, you know, you're not going to think deeply about your life and your life choices and where you should be going. But it's a fun watch. It wasn't a movie where I like checked the clock while I was watching it. So in closing, guys, how would you rate this movie?
I would give it a mighty 3-finger salute. Actually, if it was only touching Jessica Alba's ass. Sorry, Jessica. There's a lot of weird going on over here.
I would give it, you know, one thumb up. Three-fifths of the way up, right? It's better than a halfway movie. It's not good enough to get the full 3/4. But of course, it's a fist that morphs between an elastic, super long thumb, an invisible thumb you can't see that's the 3/5 thumb, a rocky 3/5 thumb, and of course, a flaming 3/5 thumb.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd give this movie a solid thumbs up for sure. Maybe not two thumbs up, but it's really fun to watch. It's short, so it's an easy watch from that perspective too, you know? And I like that you don't have to have seen a million other movies before it and wait for movies after it to get where it slots in story-wise and character-wise and plot-wise. I mean, it's self-contained. So yeah, I'd rate it pretty highly. It's a fun watch.
Yeah, I give 3/4 of thumb up, I guess. I'm not sure. You guys have said more funny things than I have to this evening about that. So overall, it sounds like we pretty much all enjoyed it. So in closing, Caleb, since we're about to head out for the evening, where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find my podcast, Black Flare, honestly, wherever you get your podcasts, whether that's Spotify or Apple Podcasts. We're an actual play tabletop role-playing game podcast. 5-6 of us sitting around the table playing a game in real life. It's heavily edited and scored with an original music score, so really sort of aiming for that cinematic feel. Yeah, it's a treat to do. It's very kind of Call of Cthulhu-esque, but modern-day set, so if you're thinking X-Files or True Detective, you're kind of on the right track flavor-wise.
Yeah, it was definitely a fun listen. And Jeremy, where can people find you?
As always, you can find me here every 2 weeks talking about old movies, but also on Retrovaniacs, talking about old video games. We post 2 episodes a month as well. You can find that anywhere you find your podcasts.
And Fergal?
Well, you can find me here on Movies Smash. You can find me at Get Your Nerd On. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on TikTok, making stories, making magic, and selling a few comic books along the way.
And for me, you can always find me at Off Panel Creations. We're always over there building some piece of nerdy furniture. And thank you, our listeners, for spending some time with us today. If you think you know who won the fight, the Thing or the Hulk, just send us a note over at movie-smash.com. We'll see you in a couple weeks. Thank you again for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show. This has been Movie Smash with Chris Roberts, Jeremy Parmentier, and Fergal Amayo, produced by me, Chris Roberts, executive produced by Off Panel Creations, LLC. Movie clips provided by the respective studios. You can rate and review the show at Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You might even find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for us? Visit us at movie-smash.com and send us a note. It too can be read on a future episode. If you haven't already, please subscribe to Movie Smash wherever you listen to your podcasts.
And the whole thing I was thinking about is, how does a rock dick work?